very good friends with Shalom Orba. So maybe he got you.
Could be.
But he gives some variances here.
Okay. What is this? Audio? They're sending me an audio?
No, they're right now sending them out of Comus. But we don't need probably the audio. His Shurim are all found on Torah at any time.
There are both sides. We're on Daf Gufo. And we're looking at Gufo, which is approximately, I'd say, about 8-9 lines down from the top. Let's just reiterate the last thing that we saw. We have a chiddush here of Rav Huna in the name of Rav. Something really new that we were never aware of. And that is that if a nitba, the defendant, takes a shvuah to support his claim that he doesn't, in this case, he doesn't have the cow, he never received it, and then witnesses come in and testify that he has the cow, and he took a shvuah sheker, he doesn't have to pay, and he doesn't have to return the cow. And the reason for that is because of the pasuk that says, after it says, shvuas Hashem tia ben shneem, then it says, v'lokach ba'olav, which the way Rav understands that it means that he took the shvuah, the bailim, the tovea, the plaintiff received the shvuah, lo yishalev. He no longer has to pay. Again, it's a pretty sensational halacha. You would think that now that the Edom came and testified that he's holding on to someone else's cow, he should have to return that cow. A very strange kind of kinyan, which if you remember the language of Ilfa, that's on the top of the page, shvua kona, that somehow miraculously through a shvua your kona. I mean, we know of an entire system and constellation of kinyanim. I never saw shvua on the list. So we have to understand how shvua is kona. That's a very strange halacha. And we mentioned the possibility that maybe the halacha of Rav is predicated on what we call like a gmar din kind of situation, meaning once the Beis Din has come to a decision after the Nitba took his Shvuah that the Nitba is potter, they're not going to reverse that decision. The case is, so to speak, closed. And even though now we have testimony and evidence that the cow is right there in front of us, the cow that belongs to the Tovea, to the Mafkid, nevertheless, the Nifkad who took the Shvuah doesn't have to return the cow. It's a pretty radical final. Before we go on, if I can beg your indulgence here, I'd like to suggest one idea. I'm not sure how to develop it yet. I have just a germ of an idea. This is not the approach that we mentioned last time in the name of the Chazon Ish, that the case is closed. But rather, perhaps, what the Gemara is suggesting is that if a nitba is actually holding on to the mamon of the tovea, he's holding on to his cow, and he goes as far as to use every method that he has within his possibility, within his reign of within the scope of his possibilities, to acquire ownership over the cow and keep it for himself. In other words, he knows that he's holding on to Reuven. Shimon knows he's holding on to Reuven's cow, and he wants that cow very desperately. He's going, if he does the maximum that he can in order to establish that that cow is his, what's the maximum that he can do?
Shvua.
He can take a shvua, right? In other words, it's not enough that he claims that the cow is his. That's not good, and that's already a kind of first step in the direction of gzela, of maintaining ownership and possession over someone else's cow, in this case the mafkid's cow. But he went even a step further, because the halacha affords him with the possibility of taking a shrua and through that shrua being able to clinch his ownership on the cow. In other words, what I'm suggesting is that when we define gzela, we can define gzela in a very general way that'll allow us perhaps to understand this sugya, this halacha. And that is that gzela is any action that's taken that will maximize the gazlan's opportunity to hold on and maintain possession on someone else's object. So obviously the classical case of Gzela is where Reuven goes into Shimon's field, into his backyard, and he steals something and he takes it away from him. And then he takes it into his chatzer, into his courtyard. But in the case of a mafkid and a shomer, where the shomer received the mafkid's cow with a full-fledged decision on the part of the mafkid, what can the shomer do to maintain ownership on this cow? And the best thing he could do is not only to deny in Bezdin that this cow belongs to the mafkid, but rather claim that it belongs to him, but he can strengthen that claim with a shvur. And once he does so, the Torah believes him with that shvur. Then he's done the maximum to maintain possession over the cow. And that's called gzela. Okay, fine. Well, what does the Torah say about a gozlan? What's his responsibility now? The Heshiv like gzela shor gozal. Oh, so I wanted to suggest the following. That what the Torah says here is that really a gozlan owns the object. Why? Because the Torah says that a gozlan can effectuate a kinyan on the object. In fact, we had many sugyas in Bava Kama, which seems to indicate that the object is already owned by the gozlan. Does anybody remember anything we said to that effect? Correct. Maybe with shinui he clinches his kinyan. Maybe by selling it to someone else he clinches his kinyan, and therefore the sale is valid. Perhaps as a result of his kinyanic zela, the nigzal cannot be magdish the animal, right? You remember that as long as the gazan's holding on to it, the nigzal can't, because the gazan already has kinyonim here. Those kinyonim stand in contrast, so to speak. It's like a tug of war here, and the kinyon of the nigzal has now become weakened as a result of the kinyon of the gazan. But why isn't the kinyon of the gazan complete? If we're already discussing the idea that the gozlan has kinyanim, as paradoxical as that sounds, granted that premise, what prevents that kinyan from being complete? Correct, exactly. The obligation to return the object. Because the halacha operates on two different levels. It's almost like shnei ksuvim machishim zedze. On the one hand, the halacha is that a gozlan, insofar as he's possessing the object and he doesn't want to let anybody, even the owner of the object, take it away from him, that grants him kinyonim to some extent. Those kinyonim cannot complete themselves, because the Torah also imposes a chiyuv hashava of a heshiv esagzela shar gozal. What the Torah is saying here is that the chiyuv hashava is conditional. It's not absolute. It's conditional on the fact that at this point the nigzal. The nigzal is claiming hashava. Why is the nigzal claiming hashava? Because the nigzal owned the cow, that we know. Even the Edom are going to testify to that effect. In other words, we know now that the nigzal had the cow. That's not questioned. And therefore the nigzal has rights to demand hashava. As a result of the nigzal's rights to demand hashava, the gazlan's kinyan on the gzel is incomplete, because the Torah says the Torah recognizes those rights of the nigzal. But at what point do the rights of the nigzal finally terminate, and the nigzal no longer has those chusim to demand the object, the chefetz hagozel, back and activate the principle of a heshiv esagzel asher gozal? The shvur. The shvua, which is imposed upon the gazlan, in this case the nifkad, by Bezdin, what the Torah is saying here is that through this shvua, the chiyuv hashava is removed. And once the chiyuv hashav is removed, the mela, the kinyani, gzela, the gazlan are complete. Because in and of themselves, inherently the kinyani, gzela, the gazlan should be complete. But what prevents it, the strings that are attached, you know, what the Gemara calls meshicha biyado, you know, he's still holding on to something that prevents that kinyan from reaching its fruition and completing himself, is the chiyuv hashava. The chiddush of the Torah is that with the shavua, the gazlan, so to speak, we don't know he's a gazlan, we believe his shvua, but the nitba, I should call him, is believed with the shvua. Once he's believed with the shvua, at that split second in time, the chiyuv hashava is paka. Because the Torah couldn't impose a chiyuv hashava and at the same time say, well, take a shvua. When the Torah, the premise of the shvua is that the nitba could be believed with the shvua. If the nitba could not be believed with the shvua, it would be absolutely meaningless for the Torah to impose a shvua. So if the Torah is giving the nitba the opportunity to be neman, to be believed with his shvua, then what the Torah is saying is that the Veheshiv HaGzela Shagazal no longer applies. Because he can't tell me on the one hand, well, we believe you to say that you're not holding on to his cow, and on the other hand to say that you have to return his cow. Do you see where I'm postulating a Tarti Desasri here? I'm saying it's A and not A at the same time. To maintain a Nemanus based on Shvua, which the Beis Din is licensed to impose on the Gazlan, which means the Gazlan now has the permission to take that Shvua, and the Torah is going to believe him with that Shvua, and then at that moment say, the Heshev is like Zela Shah Gazal, that makes no sense. Ah, you'll ask me, but now Adam came into Beis Din, and they testify that he's holding on to Yenim's cow, that the Tovea, you know, Elsie the cow is there, and the Nitba is holding on to it. It doesn't matter. It's too late, so to speak. Not too late the way the Chazon Ish says it, because we don't want to reopen the case. I'm suggesting a different shot. We cannot utilize these Adim to create a Chiyuv Hashava. Why? Logically, if we took the Eidus to the Eidim in and of itself, that Eidus would certainly generate a Chiyuv Hashav, because they're claiming that Shimon, the Nitba, is holding on to Reuven's cow, and therefore he has to return it. That's inherent in the Eidus. But the problem is that the Eidim cannot create a Chiyuv Hashava on an object that's already owned by the Nigzal. You see, if the Nigzal is just holding on to it, what word am I looking for? You know, he's confiscating it, you know, and he's confiscating someone else's cow, then certainly there's no problem to accept the Eidus and impose a Chiyuv Hashava. So what if you're confiscating it and holding on to this cow? You have to return it. It doesn't belong to you. But now that we're saying that it's not just that he's confiscating the cow, but that he's done his maximum to steal the cow, and that itself makes him into a gazlan, he acquires therefore kinyanim on the cow. Narvas, but what is it that prevents those kinyanim from reaching fruition? The chiyuv hashava. So the shvua now comes and says, well, we believe you with your claim that it's your cow and you're not stealing, you know, the Tovea's cow. And at that point, once the Torah says we're going to impose a shvua and you'll be believed with that shvua, the shvua, once it's implemented, removes the chiyuv hashava, because it's a tarti desasrei to impose a chiyuv hashava when you believe the person, in this case the nitba, the defendant, with his shvua. That's what I'm trying to say. David, what do you think?
You say the same with Edim, though. If the Torah has a procedure in place for allowing Edim to come, why have that if you don't go to the end with them?
No, what I'm suggesting is that the Edim have the ability to clarify something. So, Enochinami, I don't think Rav is going to deny the power of the Edim to clarify, to establish beyond the shadow of a doubt that this cow was stolen. But what the Edim cannot do is they cannot create Kinyonim. Do you understand the difference between clarification and creation? In the language of Shas, that's the difference between Bir and Kiyum. I don't know if that rings any bell, but it's not for now, you know, not for this year. But the Edom are believed to be Mavarer, to clarify. And Rav doesn't deny this. You know, the facts on the ground are absolutely clear. The Shvua was a Shvua Sheker, no doubt about it. That's the power of Edim. Al pishnayim Edim Yakum Dover. But really what the Pasuk means when it says Yakum Dover is Yavarer Dover. Okay, there is such a thing as Edis Lakiyim Dover. That has to do with Gittin and Kedushin. That doesn't have to do with Dini Mominus. In Dini Mominus, Edis are always Labira Dover, not Lakiyim Dover. What the Edim did not have the power to do is to create Kinyonim that don't exist. And what I'm suggesting is that the Gazlan, insofar as he's taken the Shvuah and established himself as a Gazlan, has actually acquired, again, as paradoxical as it sounds to us, ownership rights over the Gzewa. It's a very strange thing. I mean, if I go into your field and steal your cow, you know, what, why does that give me ownership rights? It's your cow. But that's the unique approach of the halacha, that somehow Gzewa acquires, the Gazan acquires kinyanim. Those kinyanim on the part of the Gazan are incomplete as long as he has a chiyuv hashava. What I'm suggesting is that inherent in the power of the Shvuah is that the chiyuv hashava is completely gone. And that's what Rav derives from the pasuk, v'lokach balav. What he says is v'lokach balav means the balim have no choice but to accept that Shvuah. The Torah gave the nitba, in this case the shomer, the rights to be believed with the Shvuah. He's then lo yishalim. What does lo yishalim mean? Now his kinyonim are complete. Why are his kinyonim complete? Because basically he had those kinyonim. By virtue of what did he have kinyonim on someone else's cow? Through gzela. Elo what? There was a chiyuv hashava. The Torah says, I'm going to believe you with the Shvuah. Once we believe you with the Shvuah, there's an absolute non-conditional hafka, removal of the chiyuv hashava. And if the Torah is saying, we believe you to claim that this is your cow and not his cow, and that's the power of the Shvuah, then lo yishalim. What does it mean, lo yishalim? Why don't I have to give you back your cow? The answer is because it's not your cow. See, that's not what the Chazon Ish is saying. Chazon Ish is saying that it's your cow. It belongs to Nidma. Right? What I'm saying is that the evidence has it that this is a stolen cow. But paradoxically, even though it's a stolen cow, it belongs to the thief and not to its original owner. That's what I'm suggesting. Michael? And then afterwards we want to go on because, again, this was just, you know, I asked you just for permission to hear the musings of a madman, you know.
If on a philosophical level, the Torah is MS, how can the Torah make such a rule?
Because the Torah wants to operate with a shvuah. And that gives us problems because, on the one hand, you know, the Torah is saying a person should be believed with the Shvuah. And on the other hand, the Torah wants to maintain that Edim are believed with their Edus. And that's where the Torah comes up with this, shall I say, Shnei Ksuva Machishim Zetzer. We have sort of a juggle. But I don't know the answer to your question philosophically. Maybe Mitch has an answer. But I'm just suggesting that your question, Michael, is not on Berzon, so to speak. What do I mean? All of Masechta Bava Kamma, and I'm exaggerating here, but over and over again, we have this concept called Kinyani Gzela. I would almost say that half of Masechta Bava Kamma is predicated on Kinyani Gzela. How do you understand Kinyani Gzela philosophically? But it has to be understood within a legal context, that Bailus is established by control over an object. Bailus is a function of the possibility of enjoying the benefit of the object. I'll give you another idea. Again, I don't, you know, we can go on this for hours. There's halacha that there's no bailus on Isuri Hano. Why not? What does that mean? I purchased a bottle of whiskey. Remember we discussed whiskey about a week or two ago, and the whiskey is worth 200 pounds sterling. Okay, I don't know how the pound is doing these days, but whatever it is, maybe we should talk about shekelim. I think shekelim are doing better than the British pound these days. That sounds pretty paradoxical. And now, boom, the sun sets on the 15th of Nisan, and I don't own the chametz anymore. I own it as far as Bal Yerah Bal Yematzi. That's complicated. But in terms of Choshen Mishpat, pure Dini Mominus, I don't own this chametz. Why? Because it's Isuri Adno. If I give it to an Ish and I say, I rap Mekudeshesli with a Josh Daniels, is this such a thing? Did I get that right? Jack Daniels, sorry. Shows you. Got the wrong guy here. Jack Daniels, right? I give a Jack Daniels. How much is a bottle of Jack Daniels worth? and she's not Mekudeshes. Why? Because it's Isuri Adnoah. Go figure that one out. So you see that the Torah has a broader and more complicated definition of ownership. Yeah, Mitch?
Okay, so Steinsaltz points out in this Or Halacha that that's, you know, it's very nice for explaining Rav, but he says the Halacha is that Mishalim Karen, once the Eidim come, Mishalim Karen will call
Yeah, that's Mitch. That's because he learned the sugya that I'm going to teach today. If I get a chance to teach it, but I was just my point. Right? No, my point. My point was just to explain Rav, yeah. Because some people give shiurim and they're only interested in the final bottom line. You know, like for example, when I say a shtickle Torah to my wife, she says, "Okay, but what's the bottom line?" You know. But she doesn't appreciate that I have to explain every Havamina in the Shas. You know, and this is not just the Havamina, this is Rav. Yeah. Rav was a pretty chosher guy.
She has to cook for Shabbos, though.
That's right, that's right. Okay, Rabbo, say Gufa. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav. Manali biyadcha vehala omer ein lecha biyadi klum. Vinishpa. So it means that the defendant took a shvua. That he doesn't, he's not holding on to anyone's moment, to the moment of the plaintiff. Ubo Edim, and the testimony came in that money belongs to the Tovea and was given over to the Nitba to safeguard the money or to borrow the money, whatever the case may be. But the Nitba doesn't have to pay the money. Why? Because Shenemar, the Torah says, "V'lokach ba'olav v'lo yishalim," but kevan shekibu avalim shvua shuv ein mishalim. Good. So that's the statement of Rav. Now Mitch wants to know, why aren't we familiar with Rav? And the answer starts now, because what you're going to see is that the Gemara is going to first try to support Rav, then limit Rav, and then reject Rav, and that's what the sugya is all about today. Amar Rava, Mistavra Milsa de Rav, I can partially accept the approach of Rav, but in so doing I have to whittle down Rav. B'milve, in the case of Milve, D'lahotzah Nitna, which means that the Love, the very moment that he receives the money, he already has acquired ownership over the money. Again, in a footnote here, I don't want to get into this, it's gigantic machlokas here. Does it mean he acquires ownership the very moment that the malva gives him the money and puts it on the table? Or it's only when he spends the money? But in any event, whichever way we go, it's lotsa nit. Okay, now, in this case, Rava says, I can accept Rav's opinion. Why? Because in the case of Milve, all we're talking about is an abstract chov. We're not talking about a be'en. We're not talking about an object. So the Torah could come along and say that chov exists up until but not beyond the point that the lova takes a shvua. Once the lova takes a shvua, he no longer has the chov. It means that the shvua, for whatever reason, as we discussed, would alleviate or cancel the chov. That I can accept, says Rav. Avo pikadon. When you're talking about a cow, we're not talking about an abstract chov, we're talking about a tangible, real object. Is Bershuse Demarikoi. It's wherever it is, it belongs to the mafkid. And therefore, forget about some sort of chiyuv that, you know, you have to pay for it. He doesn't have to pay for it. It's not a matter of paying for it. It's a matter of returning it to its rightful owner. How could the shvua somehow achieve ownership on the part of the nishba, you know, the one who took a shvua sheker, the nitba, on this cow? This is not just an abstract chiyuv tashlumin. You're talking about an abstract chiyuv tashlumin to pay money, for example, in the case of a lover, or in the case of a shomer on kesef. Then, well, actually, we're talking about a lova. Scratch that. In the case of a milva, what we have is milva lo tzah nitna, and therefore there's no claim on this sack of gold coins. That doesn't belong to the malva. The lova owes to the malva the equivalent in value of the gold coins. So the question is how he pays that. He pays with meitav. Can he give him to karka? How does he pay it? you have their shibudim, you know, to collect from lekuchas, all the dinim of a payment of halva. But on an abstract chov, the Torah can say, let's cancel that chov. Why do we cancel that chov? Because of this pasuk. Let's just leave it at that. But, says Rava, how do we understand in the case of a cow that's owned by the mafkid, that poof, the shomer doesn't have to return the cow to its rightful owner simply because he took a shvuah sheker? But Rava admits that even though he himself personally would accept a watered down version of Rav, in which he circumscribes the law of Rav, but Velokim, that's the language of God, meaning a shvuah, Amar Rav afilu b'pikad. Rav himself went way too far. He suggested, Rav, that even in the case of a pikadon, the shvuah sheker on the part of the nifkad will acquire ownership and he doesn't return the cow. Why? D'chiksiv kra, because the pasuk itself, in its context of velokach ba'ola velo yishalim, correct? Is b'pikadon ksiv. That's the parsha of pikadon. If you open up the Chumash, you'll see that the Torah is talking about a pikadon, and in that context, the Torah says v'lokach ba'olav v'lo yishalem, which means that the way Rav interpreted this pasuk, it means that in the case of a pikadon, even in the case of pikadon, the shomer is kona the pikadon by virtue of the shvuah, even though the Eidim testify that pikadon belongs to the mafkid. The Rashash here has a kasha. He says that he doesn't understand how Rava accuses Rav. In other words, the Rashash wants to suggest, to play the devil's advocate here, that Rava's attack against Rav is not justified. It's a libel. It's a false accusation. True, there's no question that Rav is referring to pikadon because the parsha, the pasuk itself, is referring to a pikadon. But says the Rashash, there are two possible scenarios in the case of a pikadon. Scenario number one is where the shomer denies that he ever received the cow. Scenario number two is where the shomer claims that the cow was stolen or it was lost. According to the claim and the shvuah of the shomer in the case of Toein Tainas Gnevo Vaveda, all he has is a chov to pay for the Gnevo and the Aveda. And if he takes the shvuah that he's not chayav for Gnev of Aveda, means, let's say he's a Shomer Chinam, or let's say there was an honest situation, whatever his claim is, he's really just denying a chov. The lie that he took was on a chov. And therefore, perhaps Rav would agree that if he says, I never got the cow, and the cow is sitting there, then he has to return the cow. Rav never denied that. Rav was saying that in the case of a pikadon, where according to the claim and the shvuah of the nifkad, of the shomer, he should, if he were telling the truth, owe a chov, but he denies that chov, in such a case, Rav says that since he took the shvuah, then the shvuah's mafkia removes the chov. And that's something that even Rava should agree. Rava says that the reason why I cannot accept the sheet of whom? Of Rav is because how could it be that the cow is sitting there and he doesn't have to return it to its owner? I can explain and even accept the possibility that through the mechanism of shvuah he can cancel a chov, but he can't cancel ownership over the cow. Says the Rashash, perhaps even Rav would agree to the fundamental assumption, the premise of Rava, namely that the kinyan would only, that it would make no sense if the shomer took a shvuah and says on this cow that this cow is mine and not yours. For sure he has to return that cow. But let's say the shomer took a different kind of a shvuah. He took a shvuah in which he claims that the ones or the aveda or the gneva, that this cow was stolen, is something that he's not responsible for, and then the Edom came to testify that in fact he is chayav for this Gneiva Aveda, again we're not going into all the details, in such a case the whole discussion between the Shvua Sheker of the Shomer and the Edus of the Edom revolves around whether he has to pay for the lost cow. That's called a chov. And believe it or not, the Rashash comes to no answer to this. Michael, I'm going to beg forgiveness. I really have to beg. I never know exactly what to spice up in the Shia, you know, in terms of what I call lumbness. But at the same time, I feel that I want to accomplish something in terms of the sugya. Because after we see the whole sugya, I think we'll get a much, much more profound grasp on what's going on. Yosef Rav Nachman v'ka'amalei l'shmait l'ha shmaitita. Rav Nachman was saying over this whole sugya of Rav, and he didn't like it. Esvei Rav Acha bar Miniyomi l'Rav Nachman. Okay, I got the names mixed up, so I apologize. Rav Nachman actually is the one who's going to defend Rav, even though, as we'll soon see, he disagrees with Rav, but he was very intellectually honest, and he wanted to defend Rav against the attack of Rav Acha bar Miniyomi. Now, Rav Acha quotes a Mishnah in Masechta Shvuos. What does it say in the Mishnah there? We're talking about a Shomer Chinam. And the Baal Bayis, the Mafkid, comes to the Shomer Chinam and he says, Heichan Pikdoni, where's my cow? Amalo Avad, it was lost. So the Mafkid says, you know what? I'm going to impose a Shvuah on you, Mashbiacha Ani, that you in fact lost, the Pikdon itself was lost. Now again, if we're talking about a Shomer Chinam doesn't have to pay for Aveda. The Mafkid is suspicious of the Shomer that maybe it wasn't lost at all, but the Shomer took a look at this cow and he fell in love with the cow and he says, I'm not going to give you back your cow. So instead he claims that the cow is lost. Omar Amen. Now this is based on a Sugya Masechta Sota, and it appears also Masechta Shvuos. On the parsha of Sota, it says, V'ansa v'omra amen v'omen, that amen is ki'ilu motzi shvua mipivdom. So now, the Shomer has taken, in effect, a shvua to substantiate his claim that the cow was lost. V'ha'edim me'idin oso sha'acholo. And the Edim testify that this Shomer consumed the cow. I guess maybe he shechted it and ate it for dinner that night. I don't know. You know, it was steak. He ate it as okay, I don't want to talk about steak here because we're going to get hungry here. So the din is, and that's what it says in the Mishnah, you can't deny the Mishnah, Mishalim es ha-keren, he pays keren. Now it's interesting. The Mishnah establishes that he doesn't have to pay Chomesh, even though again he took a Shvuas Sheker. He doesn't have to bring a Korban Asham, even though he took a Shvuas Sheker. And why is that? Because the Parsha of Chomesh and Asham is contingent not on Edom. In other words, Edom themselves could never be Mechayev Chomesh and Asham. We need what? We need Hodal Piatzmo, correct? We spoke about this at great length, the various conditions in Chomesh and Asham. One of them is Hodaya. And here, the Mishnah goes on to say, Hoda mi'atzmo, if the Shomer who took the false Shvuah now comes forward and he wants to do tshuva, and he admits that he took a false Shvuah, is then Mishalim Keren Chomesh v'Asham. But let's go back to the ratio of this Mishnah. Forget about the case of Hoda. Our discussion in terms of Rav is where the Edom came to testify that this Shomer who took a false shvuah is holding on to the Mafkid's cow. And yet, the Mishnah says in the Sefer Mishalim es HaKeren, this, despite the fact that he took what? A shvuah sheker. This is an open contradiction to Rav. Amalei Rav Nachman. Now it's interesting, Rav Nachman, who, as we'll soon see, rejects Rav, is going to protect Rav from the slings and arrows of Rav Acha. And what does he say to him? Hacha b'mayas kinon kigon d'nishba chutz lebezdin. When does Rav say that a shvua has a certain status to it? and as a result of that shvua, the gazlan can be kone. You remember the language of Ilfa at the beginning of the Ovid, that shvua kone, when can shvua effectuate a kinyan? It's got to be a special high-powered level of shvua. And what is that high-powered level of shvua? That's a shvua in Beis Din. In this case, that the Mishnah talks about the fact that he's not kone with shvua, and he has to return the keren, he took the shvua outside of Beis Din. A shvua outside the Beis Din doesn't have that special power of hakna, meaning to be a conduit through which the person who took the shvua acquires ownership over the object. What kind of shvua qualifies as that separate power? Only a shvua in Beis Din. We need what's called a shvua lifnei Beis Din. Rav Acha says to Rav Nachman, what about the Sefer? The Sefer says, we didn't read this part of the Mishnah, Heichan Pikdoni Amalo Nignav. This is a different case than the Resha. Here the Shomer claims it was stolen, and the Mafkid said, Mashbiach Ani, you know, take a Shvua that it was stolen. I suspect that you might be confiscating it. The Omar Amen, and the Shomer responded that he accepts the Shvua. For Edom, even also Shegnovo, the Edom testify that he in fact stole it, that the Shomer is holding on to it, is Mishalem Tashlume Kefel. Now keep in mind, Rabbo, so that Kefel is built on Keren. It's Keren plus another time. That's another 100% of the Keren. That becomes 200%. That's called Kefel. Then the Mishnah goes on to say, Hoda Me'atzma Mishalem Keren V'chomesh V'yosha. The e salkadaita chutz le Beis Din. If you're talking about the way you, Rav Nachman, you know, were making the Mishnah in a case where the shvua took place outside of the walls of Beis Din, is mi ikar kefel. The whole din of kefel is predicated on the assumption that the shvua was took place where? In Beis Din, in front of the dayanim of Beis Din. Such a shvua makes him into what's called a toin tainas ganav v'pikadam. And a toin tainas ganav v'pikadam becomes what? A ganav. He becomes a ganav, not a gazlan. Why do I say a ganav? Because he's chayav kefel. Only a ganav is chayav kefel. So comes along Rav Acha, and he turns to Rav Nachman, and he says, look, I have a sefer. And if in the sefer we're talking about a case of a shvua in Beis Din, then logically we should assume that the Mishnah is symmetrical, and even the Reish is talking about a case where he took the shvua in front of Beis Din. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, Yechil no l'shnui l'cha. Reisha chutz lebeis din, sefer chutz lebeis din. Miu shinuya dechika lo mashanim ilecha. He says, look, if I wanted to be a wise guy, I could tell you that the Reisha is talking about a case of chutz lebeis din, the sefer is talking about a case of in Beis Din, but that would be a shinuya dechika. You know, that would be really, you know, pushing it, you know, if I was so desperate. But I can do a better job to defend Rav. Edi bebeis din. The lokasha, even though he took a shvua, the shomer in Beis Din, and he says it was lost, and then the Edom testify that he's holding on to it, he still doesn't have to pay. The Mishnah says that he's chayiv keren kan, because the Mishnah is talking about a case, and this could be true for both the Reisha and the Sefer. No, I'm sorry, this is only true about the Reisha. My mistake. Is bekafatz. Now Rabbo said, why are we talking about jumpers here? You know, this would be good for the Olympics here, you know, the Olympic jumpers. You know, how high can you jump? Yeah. So what's kafatz? So Rashi explains, kafatz means that the mafkin was the one who imposed the shvua on the shomer. And that's really what it says in the Mishnah, because it was the mafkid who really took the shvua, just that the nifkad answered, Amen. Oh. So it comes out now, according to Rav Nachman, that we're further whittling down the chiddush of Rav. When does Rav say that the shvua is enough to be machne him, the nishbal sheker, the nifkad, the object? That's only number one if he took the shvua lifnei Beis Din. But number two, there's another condition. It's got to be a shvua Olav means that Beis Din was Mashbia Olav, not a Shvua that came from the initiative of the Mafkid, but it's got to come through Beis Din. And Rav, when was Rav taught? So the Mishnah is talking about a case of Kofatz, the Khan, but Rav, when he said that the Shvua is powerful enough to acquire ownership of the object, that's been low kofatz. It means that the shvur was imposed upon him by Beis Din. So Rabosai, it comes out like this, that in order to be makna the chefetz to the shomer, we need that Beis Din, did I say that right? In order for the shvua to be machner, the chefetz, the pikadon, to the shomer, we need that Beis Din impose the shvua. It's not enough that the shvua was taken lifnei Beis Din. There's another condition. It's got to be a shvua that was imposed upon him by Beis Din. It was Beis Din mashbian also. Then the shvua is chashim enough. It has the power, so to speak, the status to make it into a kinyan. However, if the shvua was taken bifnei Beis Din, but not imposed on the nishva by Beis Din, then what? Okay, now here we have to be very careful, Rabosai. There are one or two possibilities here. Either it means that if Beis Din were not the active facilitators of the shvua, then that shvua is like chutz le-Beis Din. Or no. It's not a shvua chutz le-Beis Din. It's a shvua in Beis Din. But it wasn't imposed by Beis Din. What's the nafkimina? Here's my question for you today. It's not my original question. The Rashba asked this question about 1,000 years ago. When the Mafkid was kafatz and he imposed the shvua on the nifkai, does the nifkai have to take a second shvua to replace the first shvua? Forget about the Adam case now. We've had Adam. You know, the Adam came to testify that he lied. Forget about that. Just let's talk about a regular case of a mafkid and a nifkad. The mafkid says, "Where's my cow?" The nifkad says, "It was lost." And then the mafkid was kafatz and he was mashbia him. What happens with the cow now?
Is it for the rov or not?
So the Rashba goes back and forth and he wants to know, does the nifkad go scot-free and he doesn't have to return the cow, or is he required to take a replacement shvua? And the Rashba says it depends. Do we view this shvua that was imposed kafatz by the mafkid as a shvua chutz le-Beis Din, or is it a shvua in Beis Din but not a shvua that was imposed by Beis Din? And the Rashba claims the following: that what happens outside of Beis Din is totally irrelevant. And if the Nifkad took a Shvua outside the walls of Beis Din, he's going to have to take another Shvua in Beis Din in order to be Potter. That's called Shvuas HaShomer. Shvuas HaShomer must take place in Beis Din. A Shvuas HaShomer requires Lifnei Beis Din. But, says the Rashba, if he takes the Shvua Lifnei Beis Din, that Shvua is sufficient to exempt him from payment, even though it wasn't Beis Din that imposed the shvua upon him. It was the mafkid who was mashbia him. However, says the Rashba, when it comes to Rav's halacha, that the shvua itself is a kinyan on the pikadon, and now even if Adam would come later and say that this cow belongs to the mafkid, that halacha requires not just bifnei Beis Din, but al yedei Beis Din, that Beis Din have to be mashbia here.
Sort of like
hafka'ah,
sort of like mafkiyah de mamon, baiting.
Oh, what principle do you have in mind? How does Beis Din have the authority to mafkiyah mamon? What's that called? Hefka baiting hefka. Wow! This throws a whole new light on the sugya of Rav. we were racking our brains to figure out how could it be possible that a man takes a shvur and he acquires ownership. We have a long list of kinyon, you know, there's Meshicha, there's Hagbah, there's Chazaka, many different kinyon. We never found shvur on the list. Now that we see that the shvur of Rav is a shvur that not only took place in Beis Din, but was imposed by the Beis Din, Beis Din now, through that maisa of being mashbiah him, Beis Din basically says to him, you know what? If you take this shvur, we believe you, and the object is yours. Through what kinyan? Is shvur a kinyan? A man takes a sefer Torah and he takes a shvur by the name of God. That's very, very impressive and very dramatic. But it's not a kinyan. The answer might be, only Berzon says this, I don't know if it's true or not, that maybe it's Beis Din that gives him the kinyan. And when it comes to Beis Din being machna something, is Beis Din doesn't have to come up with a kinyan. The shvur itself can become a kinyan. But in any event, getting back to the Rashba, this is already not Berzon, this is the Rashba. The Rashba says that basically we have three halachas of shvur. We have number one, the halach of shvur chutz le Beis Din. Then we have the halach of shvur in Beis Din. But it was imposed upon the nitba by the toveah, by the mafkir, that's called kafatz. And then we have a third category of shvur, which is the full blown shvur, and that's the shvur that's imposed by Beis Din on the nifkad. And what are the three nafkaminas here? Number one, as far as the shvur outside of Beis Din is concerned, it has no bearing on the case itself, no relevance. It is only relevant to what's called a shvuas bitui. You know, you might have to bring a karbon to be mechaper for a false shvur as a shvuas bitui. Then we have the number two upgrade, where the shvur took place lifnei Beis Din, but kafatz Beis Din was not the facilitator of the shvur. And here the Rashba says that does register on the Richter scale. Nafkamina being the nifkad doesn't have to replace that shvur with a second shvur. Beis Din will accept that shvur. Then we have the third halacha. Could that shvur that was taken in Beis Din have the power to be machna the pikadon to the nifkad? Says the Rashba, here we have to have an upgrade on the shvur bifnei Beis Din to a shvur shehishbiro so Beis Din. Only then is he A, potur, he doesn't have to replace the shvur, and B, does he acquire ownership on the pikadon such that even if the Edim come now and testify against him, he doesn't have to fork over the cow to the mafki.
What happens in the middle case?
The middle case where the shvur took place bifnei Beis Din, but not al yidei Beis Din, he doesn't have to repeat the shvur. That shvur patters him up. For when the Edim come in and testify that he lied under oath, and the cow belongs to the mafkid, he's going to have to fork over the cow to the mafkid. Even Rav agrees that such a shvur, since Beis Din was not involved in the shvur, though Beis Din sees and hears the shvur, so it does have a power of a shvur, it has a chalul shem shvur, but it's not a shvur yidei maisa Beis Din. Therefore, Beis Din could not participate in this shvur in order to be machne kinyonim to the nifka. Amalei Rami Bar Chamler of Nachman Michti. I don't understand. The Rav lo svir lecha. You don't agree with Rav. And you reject the whole din of Rav. You hold that Shvuas HaShomer could never be machne him the pikadon. Is Mashkune Nafshecha at the Rav Lomali? Why did you stick your neck out in order to defend Rav? Right, the lashon here is very interesting. Mashkune nafshecha is a mashka, you know, like you put yourself on the line and you signed as a guarantor, you know, that's what a mashkin. A mashkin is a guarantee to collect from this if I can't come through and pay you. So why did you decide to get so involved? Amalei, so Rav Nachman said to him, Lefroshe Dlidarav. I think he's asking a question mark. I shouldn't be interested in interpreting Rav. In other words, there's a Mishnah here which contradicts Rav. I have an obligation, in all honesty and fairness, to explain that Mishnah in such a way that it reconciles with Rav. The Rav Hachi Mataritz Le Lemas Nisan. This is no doubt the way Rav would interpret the Mishnah. But now we've seen clearly that Rav Nachman rejects Rav. Rav, if you recall, whittled down Rav. But Rav Nachman rejected Rav. And that's why Rav Acha asked him, that's why Rami Bar Chama asked him, why are you giving answers to defend Rav if you reject Rav? So the Gemara right away asks, how could Rav Nachman reject Rav or Rav Kroka Omar? What are you going to do with the Pasuk? The Pasuk says, V'lokach Bolov V'lo Yishalim. How's Rav Nachman going to interpret that Pasuk? So the Gemara answers, Amri, the answer to your question is, Kra, this Pasuk is teaching me a whole different halacha. And what is that halacha? L'chol ha'nishbayim shebat Torah. This pasuk is telling me a yesod, a fundamental principle defining when and where a shvuah is going to be imposed. Because as you know, every case in dini momentus, every litigation has two, it takes two to tangle, right? You have the tovea and you have the nitba. Now the nitba wants to support his claim against the tovea by taking a shvuah. Well, logically, why not allow the Tovea to support his claim with the Shvua? You follow my question? We ought to be, Michael, maybe in your terminology, philosophically, we should be fair over here. Let's be fair. You're offering a license, an opportunity to the Nitba to take a Shvua. Why not offer that license to the Tovea to take the Shvua? And the answer is, Kol Nishboim Shabbat Torah Nishboim V'lo Mishalim. Only the Nitba has a right to take the Shvua. And who the Asa, that we derive from this Pasuk. The Pasuk is coming to teach us that whenever the Torah imposes a Chiv Shvua, what the Torah has in mind is that the Nitba, the defendant, should take a Shvua to protect and support his claim that he's Patur against the claim of the plaintiff. But the plaintiff does not have the right to take a shvuah. And how do we interpret this in the pasuk? The lokach ba'olav, the lo yishalim. What does it mean? Misha olav l'shalim hu nishba. The pasuk there is talking about the shvuah, and it says the lokach ba'olav v'lo yishalim. Who's the lo yishalim? About whom can you say the words lo yishalim? He doesn't have to pay. The plaintiff or the defendant? The defendant, correct? So the subject of this pasuk is the defendant. And since the ratio of the pasuk is talking about the shvuah, therefore, the Torah is whittling down the scope of shvuah, and it only applies to the lo yishalim, to the nitba. But not the opposite. There's no such thing, on a Torah level at least, of a shvuas hatoveh. So in the footnote here, he quotes the Pnei Yoshua, and he wants to know, since Rav needs this very same pasuk to teach you that the Nifkat is Kone, the Pikadon, through his Shvuah, how does he know this halacha? So I would like to suggest an answer to the Pnei Yoshua, and suggest the following answer. Rav holds, I don't need a pasuk for that. The whole concept of a Shvuah only makes sense with regard to the Nitba. The Tovea has no right to a shvuah. What do I mean? In Dini Momenos, there are two separate categories, two separate halachas. There's halacha of ne'emanus, and then there's halacha of raya. Raya means when I deduce objective evidence. Shvuah is not an objective raya. Shvuah is only ne'emanus. What do I mean? The Mafkid has a certain level of power, so to speak, to his tvia, to his claim. After all, I gave you a cow. What happened to the cow? Oh, the cow got lost. Sounds a little fishy. So the Torah says that because the tviyas hatoveya is, let's call it a tviya chashuva, it has certain significance. Let me give you another case. Moda b'miktas. Look, you borrowed 1,000. No, I only borrowed 500. Well, come on. You're admitting to me that I gave you a loan. You've already gone halfway to substantiate my claim against you. That gives my claim as a tovea the upgraded status of a tviya chashuva. And now, you want to defend yourself by rejecting my claim. We need a little bit of chizuk, a little bit of strength here. You know, you have to somehow have a balance of powers over here. The scale is tipped heavily in favor of the tovea. The nitba is sort of down in the dumps over here. We're worried about the nitba. Maybe he's lying. So what we do is we offer the nitva a shvua, and with that opportunity of a shvua, he gives chizuk to his tviya, to his taina, and that sort of balances. And in that balance, we say amotzi mechavero olav haraya. The yisoda yisodos of demanding the malva or the tovea, whoever he is, the mafkin, to substantiate his claim is hilchas raios. We're not interested in nemonis over here. Nemonis is not enough to cause him, who the nitba, who contradicts you and rejects your claim, to cough up the object. He's motzak, my friend. Hamotzi mechavero, all of haraya. Nemonis is not going to do it. You might be Moshe Rabbeinu. You might be Aaron HaKohen. You have all the nemonis in the world. But there's another halacha here. Hamotzi mechaveru olav haraya. No tviya of any tovea, no matter how much nemonis you give him, is enough to remove Mammon from cheskaso. Because every Jew has nemonis. And we're not going to, you know, grade it. You know, this guy has 100% nemonis, this guy has only 20% nemonis. No, we don't work with that. The nemonis and the nitba is enough to create a situation where he's muchzak and you can't take it out of his hand. Unless you bring a raya. Shvua is totally out of the picture. Totally inappropriate. Because the shvua is not a raya at all. Shvua is nemonis. But in terms of the nitva here is a little bit yodo ala techtona. He's got a weak situation here. There's objective reason to indicate that the tovea has a claim that's a substantial claim against the nitva. Now what do we have? The word of the nitva against the word of the tovea. I'm saying the word of the Tovei against the word of the Nitba. Then we say, let the Nitba substantiate his claim. Give us a little reason to believe that perhaps he's telling us the right story. And it's not Chayil. For that, the Torah gives a Shavua. So there's no such thing as a Nishba v'notel, says Rav. I don't need a Pasuk for that. I can use this Pasuk that a person is Kona, the object, with a Shavua. Masiv, Rav Hemnuna, we have a Mishnah, again in Masechet Shavuos. And the Mishnah says something unbelievable. Hishbia olav chamesh pa'amin. The mafkid demanded from the shomer that he return the object. And the shomer took a shvua. And then the mafkid again claimed against him. And you and I would have said, well, he already took a shvua. Lozmer upit. You know, I don't have to take another shvua. No. He could be mashbia five times. And bein bifnei bezdin. Bein shalo b'fnei bez. No matter where the shvur took place, the kofar olav, in each case, with each tviya, the shomer denied the claim, and then afterwards he admitted that he lied. Is chayav in such a case, the shomer has to pay chomesh v'yoshem, I'll call achas v'achas for each one of the tviyos against him. That's what it says in the Mishnah. The Omer Rav Shimon, and Rav Shimon in that Mishnah says, Matam, why is he chayv on each kfira in and of itself? And he can be chayv for five different kfiros on five tviyos on the same mamon, and each one is going to engender a chiv chomesh v'yosham unto itself. Says Rav Shimon, Hoel v'yachol lachzar ulahodos. After every shvua that he took, right, he took the shvua five times, after every shvua, he could have been moda, he could have done tshuva, and he could have confessed that he took a false oath. Now, as you know, we've discussed this in great length, in order to be chayev, a karbar, a chomesh, and an asham, we need what's called a kfiras mamon. You remember we had a whole long discussion about the case of chomesh ha'aval of a Pesach, whether that shvua would engender a chiv chomesh v'yashem, since he doesn't gain anything with the shvua, because anyway the chomesh is worthless. It's not, it's Yisuri Adnor. So in order for a shvua sheker to engender a chiv of karban ha'ashem, it's got to be a kfiras mamon. Says Reb Shimon, each one of these five kfiros, and therefore each one of the respective shvuos, is a kfiras mamon. Why? Because after each shvua, he could have been moda, and that hoda would have obligated him to return the cow. And therefore, it's a kfiras mamon. So you have a kfiras mamon times five in this case, because each kfira could have been succeeded by a hodaya. And that would have been the appropriate response to a person who does tshuva after he took a shvuah sheker. So there's a separate avera here. Each time he takes a shvuah sheker, and each avera engenders a chiyuv keren chomesh v'yasha. Now, what's absolutely clear from this Mishnah, that's the question of Rav Hamnuna, is that if he would have admitted that he took a false oath, he would be chayav a keren, not only a keren, but a chomesh v'yasham. That's an open contradiction to Rav, because Rav says that once he took a shvuah sheker, he owns the cow, it's his cow. So therefore the kfira subsequent to the first kfira is not a kfiras mamon, because that's his mamon. He owns rightfully that cow.
Why can't he just refuse to take any more oaths then?
Why
is he taking more oaths?
He could have. You know, he didn't have to take the oath. No one's forcing him to take the oath. In fact, the Gemara now says that even Rav would be moed in this case. Why? Hacha kavatz. Maybe this is a case of kafatz. Maybe Beis Din didn't even get involved in being mashbia him. Says the Gemara, lo matzis amrit. You can't tell me that that's the case of the Mishnah. Why? Because let's read the Mishnah carefully. The Mishnah says, Hishbia olav, that's the key word, olav. Rashi explains that whenever it says olav, it means that Beis Din were imposing the Shvuah. And therefore, according to Rav, through that Shvuah, he's got to pay. I'm sorry, he doesn't pay because he acquires it over. No, but maybe you'll tell me that it was Chutz LeBeis Din Lo Matzis Omer. That too you can't say, because it says Bifnei Beis Din Ketani. It must be that even though Beis Din was Mechayev him and he took that Shvuah, the Shvuah itself is not Machne him the Pikadon, and therefore it's a Shvuah's Mamon, because he could have, as Reb Shimon said, been Moda and then he would have paid. So Gemara answers, Hu Mosiv La Vahu Mefarik La. Rav Hamnuna was one who asked the question, he answers it. Litzdadim Ketani. What you have to do is you have to analyze this mission and take it apart. Litzdadim. That's always a difficult kind of task. He says, Hishbia Olav. When it says in the Mishnah, Hishbia Olav, that means Bezin was Mechayvim to the Shvuah. And then it says, Vinishba, he took the Shvuah. Chutz LeBezin. He took the Shvuah outside of Beis Din, even though Beis Din was mashbia him and forced him to take the oath, but he went outside of Beis Din and he took the oath. Ube Beis Din, now there's another case where they were mashbia the mafkid be Beis Din, and what happened over here? He did not take the Shvuah that Beis Din was imposed upon him, but rather kafatz. And in this case, we can interpret the Mishnah as, number one, referring to a case where he took the Shvuah outside of Beis Din, number two, where the Shvuah was imposed upon him by the Mafkid, that's called Kafatz. And in these two cases, as we've already discussed in the context of Rav Nachman, Rava is Modeh, that the Shomer is not Kone, the Pikadon, either because the Shvuah took place outside of Beis Din, or because the mafkid was kafatz and he imposed the shvuah. So let's go back to the Mishnah, and then we'll stop for Mincha and read this into the Mishnah. You're going to read it like this: Hishbia olav chamesh pa'amim bein bifnei Beis Din, means that Beis Din was mashbia, but he took it outside the Beis Din. Or on bein shalom bifnei Beis Din means that the mafkid was kafatz and mashbia. Okay, Rabos, I wish everyone a great Shabbos, and tomorrow and next week, if it's Hashem, we'll try to pick it up where we left off, even though we're almost at the end of the sugya, but not quite. When the Mishnah says Hishbia Olav, it's referring to the next part of the Mishnah. We have to skip a little bit of Shalom Bifnei Beis Din. It means Chutz LeBeis Din. So the Shvuah took place outside of Beis Din. And then when it says Beis Din, it means that the Mafkid was Mashbia him. And in both those cases, Rav agrees that there's no Kinyan of the Nifkad on the Pikadon.